everybody.
Hello. Welcome back to America's Sweethearts, the podcast that celebrates women in film through their catalog of work by genre. I'm Bailey.
And I'm Chaney.
And today we are focusing on Julia Roberts, and this is our fourth segment, and the genre that I have chosen was romantic comedy, and the one that I picked out of all of the romantic comedies that Julia Roberts has done is Pretty Woman, the one that made her famous.
Yes, and she does have such a great catalog of romantic comedies. It's really hard to choose, but
it is.
We made the right choice. Or rather, you did.
Oh, I thank you.
Hey, you're welcome.
Okay, so are we just going to launch right into it?
I don't see why not. The movie can be found on Amazon Prime for, I think, $3.99.
Okay, so Pretty Woman, directed by Gary Marshall, starring Julia Roberts, Richard Gere, Ralph Bellamy, Jason Alexander, and Hector Alonso. And the sources that I used for my research is Wikipedia, a biography article by Brad Witter, and Collider article by Thomas Ryman.
Oh, you're really trying to give people credit. I gave up last time.
Well, I don't know exactly what the appropriate approach is to citing your sources.
So. I get it. I mean, I think it's safe to say that Wikipedia will always be a good source that we're using.
Oh, yeah. It's a great launching point.
Yes, which I know that there are ways to donate to Wikipedia, and we should probably do that since we're going to be using them very often.
Mm-hmm. It's really important to have this free
wealth of knowledge.
That's it. Yes. On just about anything. And if you have something you want to contribute, you can to Wikipedia.
Yeah.
I mean, you might get fact-checked and have it deleted, but
I mean, that would be me.
Okay, so somewhere in here, I'm sure that I fit the 5-point criteria. And if I exceed that, then, you know, we'll argue about
it. Edit it all out.
Okay, you can
that
do that.
Sixth point is just going to be erased. No one will ever know.
Okay, so Pretty Woman was originally set to be produced by a small studio called Vestron Pictures. In the beginning, it wasn't actually called Pretty Woman. It was originally called 3000. And Julia Roberts was originally signed on to play Vivian Ward.
I mean, the name 3000 does not give off the same feel as...
No, it doesn't. It doesn't, does it?
No, I would think like, I don't know, Bicentennial Man. I would think something like scientific or sci-fi, I guess.
Uh-huh. Well, it's funny that you actually say that because, well, I'll get to that in a second, but firstly, can you guess why that was the original title?
Because that was the amount of money that he offered her.
Yes, exactly. $3,000 is the amount that they agreed upon for her to work for him for the week.
Right.
And, okay, I want to address what you said about it sounding like a sci-fi, because that's important.
Yes.
Okay, so Vestron folded. And Disney came in and picked up the project to be distributed under their Touchstone name, which, for anyone who doesn't know, Touchstone was created in the 80s to distribute movies made by Disney that had a PG-13 or R rating.
Yeah, I was going to say, because when I was doing my research for Sleeping with the Enemy, I found out Pretty Woman was a Disney movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really surprised because the content is not something you would think would be Disney. So that makes a whole lot of sense.
Yeah. And I haven't really looked into it, but I'm really curious as to like the whole catalog of movies that were distributed by Touchstone.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's only a few that I really know of. So when it came to the project, Disney did not want Julia Roberts because at this point, her only credit worth mentioning was Mystic Pizza.
Mm-hmm.
And Steel Magnolias had not come out yet. So they preferred to have someone that was more famous at the time. So she was signed on, the company folded, and she lost the job. They also wanted a script rewrite. The original script, the one that Julia Roberts was originally signed on to, was much darker and grittier, and it did not have a happy ending. It was actually, yeah. So Vivian and Edward's relationship in the original script had him at the end throwing her out of his limo in an alley and tossing money at her and driving away.
Ugh! Oh, that's rude.
And then the movie ends with Vivian driving silently to Disneyland.
Oh, man.
Mm-hmm.
So she uses the money from the week to just do a little Disney spree?
I guess that was what the original... I think it was just supposed to be, like, really tragic.
Yeah.
And disenchanting.
Yeah, especially since at the beginning of the movie, it's that man saying, "Welcome to LA, where all your dreams can come true." That's just...
Exactly.
I mean, it is more realistic. I mean, you hear all the time that people go to LA and their dreams do not come true. So I guess it's realistic, but boy, do I not want to watch that.
Right. Well, so Disney was like, nope.
Yeah.
And we want to make this a romantic comedy, and we want you to just change the title because 3000 sounds like a sci-fi.
Yes, I was right on the money.
So then began the long, drawn-out casting experience. And are you ready for this? Because it seems like everybody was offered this role.
Really? I'm so ready.
Okay. Karen Allen from the Indiana Jones movies was the first pick, but she declined.
Was she the one in the first movie?
The first and the last.
Okay.
And then also Crystal Skull, I think.
Marianne, is that her name?
I think so. I guess she wasn't in the third movie, but she was definitely in the Crystal Skull movie. It's been a long time since the third movie. I don't remember.
The third movie is Temple of Doom. She's not in that one. That's the blonde lady.
No, the second one is Temple of Doom. The third one is The Last Crusade.
Okay, she's not in that. That's
okay.
The love interest in that is the Nazi woman.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't remember that movie at all. So she said no.
Okay.
Molly Ringwald declined because she felt uncomfortable playing a sex worker. Winona Ryder and Jennifer Connelly auditioned but were deemed too young because one was 18 and one was 19.
Okay.
But just to put things in perspective, Julia Roberts was 21.
Right.
So there's not a huge age difference between 18 and 21.
No, but they may still have looked like babies, whereas Julia Roberts did not.
Right, exactly. And we've talked a lot about how, like in Hook, we thought that she was an adult when really she was just 23 years old.
Right. Yeah, she looks like she's 25, at least, in Pretty Woman. She looks like a woman.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, back to it. Mary Steenburgen, Meg Ryan, and Jennifer Jason Leigh also turned it down.
Meg Ryan?
Yeah. Isn't that funny?
Okay. Yeah. I cannot see that. That's an interesting casting choice.
But she was a huge star at the time. Yes.
I just don't see it. Not that she couldn't do it. It's just blowing my mind a little bit.
I know. I mean, thinking about all of these people being Vivian Ward in Pretty Woman is a little challenging because really I just think of Julia Roberts. Okay, so Daryl Hannah thought the role was degrading to women. Michelle Pfeiffer didn't like the script's tone. And Diane Lane almost played the role, but in the end had scheduling conflicts.
Wow. I can't get over all of these women. Their types are all over the place.
Well, Michelle Pfeiffer was more of a choice when they thought it was going to be a darker drama.
I can see her playing that.
Mm-hmm. So many, many actresses at the time did not consider this a desirable role.
You said Daryl Hannah was the one that said it was degrading to women?
Yes.
Was this for the old script or the new script?
It was kind of hard to tell who was reading the old script and who was reading the new one. But Julia Roberts decided to take a chance on it, even though the original story was also outside of her comfort zone. But it made her a huge star. And to this day, it is the second top-grossing Touchstone film on an international scale.
Cool.
Yeah, and that's my big... I mean, I've got a lot of other stuff, but I figure I can insert it as it becomes relevant.
Yeah, yeah, that was good. Well done.
Thanks.
Interesting stuff.
I mean, there's also like a lot of different people that were offered the role of Edward and turned it down. But I figured we could talk about that later.
Like you and me privately?
No. Like,
I'm sure people would want to know.
Okay, well, I'll just do it now.
Just do it now. Rip off that Band-Aid.
Yeah. I'll just do it now. Okay, so to do that, I'm just going to skip to the ending. And we can talk about the ending again later. But just in the context of it, of the ending being changed for the script. The real main reason why it changed to a happy ending is because Julia Roberts and Richard Gere had such an incredible chemistry that it was like palpable to everyone. And they didn't think that any of the audiences would accept a sad ending, a tragic ending, with how well they were playing together on screen.
I'm really interested how the rest of the script was, knowing what we have as a movie now, there's nothing in the script that would make me believe that he would do that to her in the end. His character had to completely change.
Well, it was different. It was definitely different. Vivian Ward in the original script had a drug addiction.
And in this one, it's just floss.
Yeah. Her friend, there is some innuendo that she's doing drugs.
Yeah.
And also Kit died in the original script. So anyway, as they were changing it to a romantic comedy, I think it was probably going to go there naturally anyway, but what really drove it was the chemistry between the two of them. And Richard Gere had already turned the role down twice, and he only signed on because Julia Roberts hung out with him. I think they were meeting for the first time, and they just had like a really great conversation, and the director called while they were having a conversation, and Richard Gere answered, and they're like, "So you're going to take the role?" And Julia Roberts wrote down on a post-it that said, "Please say yes." And he handed it to him and he's like, "I guess I'm taking the role."
Well, that seems like good timing.
Yeah, right? It seems a little orchestrated, maybe.
Yeah. Hey, Julia, go have a conversation with him and we'll call. And you just work your magic. We'll make it impossible for him to say no.
Yeah, so the other people that were considered for it, and some of these were when it was a different script. We have Sylvester Stallone.
I love Sylvester Stallone. Don't get me wrong. That's funny, though. Don't stifle your laughter.
Yours was just too good. I didn't want to overshadow. Okay, so ready for the next one?
Am I? I don't know.
Daniel Day-Lewis.
Oh, okay. I could see that.
Kevin Klein.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Denzel Washington.
Ooh, okay.
John Travolta.
Okay.
Christopher Reeve. And I didn't write this one down, but hold on. What is his name?
Kevin Costner.
No.
Mel Gibson.
Bruce Willis. No. You know, a Godfather. Al Pacino,
yes.
I believe, but I didn't write it down.
Okay. Yeah, Al Pacino and Sylvester Stallone are probably the weirdest on that list. The rest I can kind of see. They were better with picking the guys than the women, I think.
Mm-hmm. So what were some of your favorite parts of the movie?
What were some of my favorite parts of the movie?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Do you have it playing in the background?
No, because then I'd have to buy it again.
Yeah.
But, so Nick was trying to sleep and I'd said that I was going to watch the movie and he was like, okay, well, that's fine. It's not going to bother me. And normally he goes to sleep in 2 seconds flat. To speak to how good this movie is, he stayed up for a whole 35 minutes watching this with me and, instead of just passing out in the first 2 seconds. But when it got to the, did you know that your foot is the length of your wrist to your elbow? We both tried it. I nearly broke my hip.
Oh, no.
I am not that flexible.
I totally did it too, but I was laying in bed, so.
Well, I was too.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm not very flexible either.
My legs just don't bend that way. But I found my forearm is a lot longer than my foot.
Really?
It does not match. I'll show you right now if I don't
hurt myself. Okay, please do. Can all right, see? This is what I'm seeing, everybody. Her foot is like level with her elbow. Oh. And. She just moved closer.
There's like a good inch and a half extra on my forearm.
Okay,
here goes Bailey. Let's see.
Well, I think what you're supposed to do is have it at the crook of your elbow and measure it.
The crook of the elbow. Hold on. Yeah. I think I have to put the microphone down for that.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. Okay, with the crook of the elbow, maybe. It's hard to tell.
Are you okay?
I'm fine.
So, you know, I actually wrote that down as something that I, you know, if you brought it up, I wanted to talk about it because I looked it up and it is something that is supposed to be true. But I also find it interesting that Julia Roberts has a size 9 foot because she's so tall, and my feet are 8.5, 9. Like, why am I not taller? Is what I want to know.
Well, yeah, I have a 7.5, 8 foot foot.
No, you don't have 8 foot feet.
My forearms must be really long if that were the case.
No, but then your forearms are 9 feet long because they're longer than your feet.
Can you imagine me walking down the street having Pretty Woman play in the background with my 8 foot feet and gorilla arms? Okay. On that note, another part that I really enjoyed was when they're taking the bath together and she's like, my legs are 44 inches and so you have 88 inches wrapped around you right now. And I'm like, my whole body is 44 inches. What it must be like to have that long of legs.
Something cute about that scene when she's in the bathtub.
Uh-huh. Oh, when she's by herself in the bathtub?
Yeah.
That is why she's America's sweetheart. That scene right there.
Oh, so you know what the story is?
Oh, no. I'm just going off of her acting, singing that song, and then...
Oh, yeah. It's really cute.
And then when she finds out that she's getting $3,000 and goes under the water and then comes back up and blows the bubbles out of her face and he hits her with the towel. It's just... It's so... sweet and precious, and is why America fell in love with her. It just captures you. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, as they were shooting that scene, they were taking multiple takes. One of the times that she went underwater, Richard Gere and the rest of the crew decided to play a prank on her so that when she came out from under the water, there was nobody in the room. Apparently, there was a lot of pranking and stuff going on set. That's they were just good. Having a really good time.
It shows. There's so much joy in it. And yeah, it's a great movie. I forgot how good it was. It makes you smile a lot.
Oh yeah, it's very cute. I was expecting it to annoy me more than it did because I knew that it was based on the Pygmalion story. And there's been many iterations of the Pygmalion story. And for anybody that doesn't know what the Pygmalion story, it comes from Greek mythology. And about a man who thought that all of the women that were around him were soiled in some way. So he said, I'm going to make the most perfect woman out of marble, and that will be my idol. And then he goes to the altar of Aphrodite and wishes in his heart for a woman as perfect as the statue that he's made. And he comes back and kisses the marble and she comes to life. So it's like My Fair Lady is a Pygmalion story. And this is a little bit more loose, especially since he's not actively trying to change her. He has hired her for a job, right?
Right.
There's a different dynamic there, but because I very much dislike My Fair Lady, and She's All That is also a Pygmalion story. So I was expecting to be a little more aggravated with this movie, and it turned out that I thought that there were a lot of really feminist themes in it, and I was a little annoyed with Richard Gere's character. I didn't really like Richard Gere's character. It's more like I'm just rooting for Vivian the whole time. But, you know, here's this extremely privileged white man who's overcome with ennui and, you know, how much he has. And so he tries to change it up and he keeps her at a distance most of the time. And like, you know, like that one scene where he asks everybody to leave the room in this hotel when, you know, it's not his hotel.
Are you talking about the piano scene?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's just a lot of little things like that. I'm just like, I don't really, really like him very much. But other than that, like, I really liked the movie.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's a very privileged, rich man and pretty much can have whatever he wants. And that type of arrogance, even if he might be a nice guy, still isn't very intriguing.
Yeah, so that was the one thing that just didn't sit well with me. But I guess we'll come back to it at the ending. But, you know, just the last line of the whole movie felt really good.
Yeah. On Richard Gere, some of those suits that they put him in looked so frumpy.
I didn't notice. I did notice that really awful tie that he wore at one point.
Yeah, his outfits were not great. And I understand, I mean, that might have been the time frame, but... And nowadays, there's nothing like a good tailored suit. And a lot of men nowadays, when they wear a suit, it's very fitted and look really great. That was not the time frame for this film. It was like 2 to 3 sizes too big for him. That's what it looked like. He had no body shape. It was just frumpty dump central.
That's so funny. No, all I really noticed was that tie that was like a gold chain print.
Well, and when she's doing her shopping and she looks at that sales attendant and she's like, oh, he would love this tie. Edward would love that tie. And they're like, give him the tie. And it's a terrible tie.
I figured that must have been the tie that she picked. Otherwise, they wouldn't have said it and then not have that be the next tie.
Yeah. Well, and the fact that she's like, he would love this tie. Girl, you've only known him for 3 days. How do you know what kind of ties he likes?
Yeah, no kidding. And also in that same scene, I just have to bring up because I thought it was so funny. The Mary Pat, Mary Kate, Mary Frances, they're the nuns of the Holy Order of Retail.
What I also loved about that scene is they kind of fake you out with the montage. The music starts and then there's no montage.
And then it's true.
You're like, oh, I thought that was coming. And then like 3 minutes later, the music swells back up and it starts and there's the full montage. But they trick you. They build That's it up really and good. Then it doesn't happen.
There's some great music in this movie.
There really is.
Speaking of music, the opera that they went to listen to is called La Traviata by Verdi. And it's one of the most famous operas. I haven't seen it, but it is extremely, not most famous, extremely popular opera. And it is about a famous courtesan who falls in love with a young lord, and they are engaged to be married. And then the father of that lord comes and convinces her to break the engagement for the benefit of his family. And she does so, and the young lord doesn't understand what happened, and he gets really, really jealous. And at some point, he humiliates her in front of a group of people and throws money at her feet, said, thank you for your services.
So very Moulin Rouge.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I did not make that connection, but now that you say it, it's obvious.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, so he does that, and then she gets sick with tuberculosis. And the father tells the son what he's done because he thinks the way that his son treated her was wrong. And so he realizes what he's done and he goes to her side to proclaim his love for her. And it's
then
too
she
late.
Dies.
She dies. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yep. That sounds just like Moulin Rouge a little bit.
You know, now I want to look in and see if it actually is an adaptation of La Traviata just
it
with modern music.
Like it could very well be.
It sounds like a really great possibility.
Yes.
If not a certainty.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, I thought that was interesting. Yeah. I really like thinking about the intentionality of the music that's put in the film when it's something borrowed from something else and not written originally for the movie.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad that you did that research to find that out.
Yeah, of course. Oh, one thing that I wanted to talk about was the car that they drive around in, the Lotus.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out that was not their first pick for the car that they wanted to represent in the movie.
Okay.
They originally approached Porsche and Ferrari, and both of those companies said no because they didn't want to be associated with the content of the movie. But Lotus was like, yeah, sure. And then they sold a lot more cars.
Yeah, as Julia Roberts says in this movie, big mistake, big, huge.
Yeah. I don't think anybody expected it to be such a huge hit.
Well, and it just goes to show that maybe you shouldn't judge a book by its cover or a script Absolutely. By its content.
Exactly. I wanted to ask you, do you know how to drive standard?
Oh, no.
No?
Yeah, Stick me shift? Neither.
Yeah, no.
No. I understand the concept of it, the clutch and shifting with the brake and all that, but I don't think I could execute it.
Well, you know, neither can Richard Gere. He's so bad at it that he gets lost in a city.
You'd think he would. I mean, his name is Gere, after all. That was a bad joke. That was real bad.
But apparently, Julia Roberts, when they filmed this movie, she did not have a driver's license yet. And she was so exhilarated driving this speedy car that she would drive so fast that the camera crews couldn't keep up with her.
Good for her.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah, one thing I love is just how unapologetic she is about herself.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the things that makes this movie so empowering.
Mm-hmm. The whole scene where she first goes into the hotel and the couple is staring at her while they're waiting for the elevator. And she goes, oh, I have a run in my pantyhose. Silly me, I'm not wearing any pantyhose. And she sticks her 44-inch leg up in the air and sets it on that trash can to feel her leg. It's just, it's so good. And
yeah. Yeah, no, it reminded me of the story that my roommate and business partner told me. She was in, I think, San Francisco with her friend, and they were riding on a bus, and they had their arms up holding on to the, you know, the handholds, because they were mm-hmm. standing on the bus, mm-hmm. and they have armpit hair, and they had the one arm up, and there was just this guy that was staring really hard at their armpit hair. And so our friend looks at her armpit hair and back at the man and goes, hee hee ha ha, and then raised the other one and goes, hee hee ha ha.
The gates of hell have opened up. Arm hair is coming at you. That's really funny. Yeah, it's a very similar situation, you know. Why apologize for who you are? Why not just embrace it? And if other people have a problem with it, then, you know,
that's their problem.
Yeah, you can't expect everybody to like you. You can't expect everyone to like your choices. As long as they're not hurting anybody around you or putting anybody in danger, then mm-hmm. why can't we just let people live their lives?
Absolutely. Hey. Why did you pause it?
Potty break.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Don't go too far. We'll be right back. Enjoying Two Sisters Present America's Sweethearts? Feel free to leave us a review.
Tell us what you love.
And if you must, tell us what you don't love.
I don't love mayonnaise.
I mean about the podcast.
Right.
Contact us through Twitter, Instagram, or email.
Find our handles on our website, www.twosisterspresent.com.
You can also join our Patreon with exclusive content and access for picking your own movie or artist for us to cover.
What? You can pick the next America Sweetheart?
Sure can. Find out all the info at www.patreon.com/twosisterspresent.
Thank you and goodbye.
Later. All right. I'm back. I'm ready. Let's go.
Before we push play, there's one more thing we need to say.
Ooh, enlighten me.
We need to give a shout out to two very special people who have helped make this podcast possible.
Ooh, I know. Mm-hmm. Do-do-do-do!
Drum roll, if you please. Our logo designer, Angela Panina, and the music from Colin Moore.
Oh, Angela is also an amazing baker, by the way, if you didn't know that, Bailey. Mm-mm. She has made me some gluten-free churro cupcakes to die for. Mm. And if anybody wants to discover just how heavenly these churro cupcakes are, nice. You can find Angela at Angelic Confections on Facebook or at Angelic Confections HTX on Instagram. So that's Angelic Confections Houston, Texas, but HTX.
Churro cupcakes sound amazing.
Oh, Bailey, you don't even know. I could live in that icing. It's so good.
You can also find more of Cullen's music on Spotify. He recently released his first plaid tuxedo album, Soaring Through the Wind.
I listen to it almost daily. Hashtag no regrets.
Anyway, you guys are awesome. Ready?
Oh, super ready.
3, 2, 1, go. That scene where she's watching I Love Lucy on the floor.
Yes.
So, I mean, I can agree with this, but apparently, like, back in the day, in 1990, one of the big things that people just really loved about Julia Roberts and really brought them in was her laughter.
Uh-huh.
And apparently she had a really hard time laughing in front of the camera. It didn't sound genuine.
I was wondering, while I was watching that scene, I was like, because I've seen that episode of I Love Lucy. Don't get me wrong. I love Lucy.
It's very funny.
It is very funny. It is not that kind of funny.
No, I actually have that almost specifically written in my notes. It's an episode called Lucy's Italian Movie. And it's a very famous episode, mm-hmm. but I will chuckle when watching I Love Lucy, but she is just, it's like a riot to her. like she's never watched TV before.
You know? Yes.
And apparently what they had to do to make her laugh, because every time they tried, it was probably like, ha ha ha. I don't know. It's just what I imagine because it's funny. But what they did was, her feet were off camera.
They were tickling her feet?
The director was tickling her feet. Yeah. Now that laugh sounds more in line with being tickled. Not just tickled by Lucille Ball's comedic genius.
Yes, that makes a lot more sense. Because it just, the laugh sounded genuine. It just didn't seem to match what she was watching.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like, you totally believe that it's a genuine laugh. It just doesn't quite align with what she's doing.
Yes. I mean, Lucille Ball makes some really funny faces. But unless you've never seen them before, it just didn't match. It just didn't match. But that's okay, because the laughter is so enchanting that mm-hmm. you can forgive it.
But in the same avenue, I mean, that wasn't really improvised, I guess. It was directed, sort of. But that scene where she's also laughing because Richard Gere closes the jewelry box on uh-huh. her hands, uh-huh. that was completely improvised.
Aww.
Yeah, so that laughter was actually, like, no one was tickling her there.
And that was one of the most iconic moments of the whole mm-hmm. film.
Yeah, it's so sweet. And those jewels were real. I was actually thinking while watching them, I was like, those are some beautiful rubies or garnets. I couldn't tell what they were, but that necklace was beautiful. And then while I was researching, I learned that it was actually like a $10,000 piece.
Mm-hmm.
No. It's worth $250,000.
Which I think is what they say in the movie as well.
Yes, I think they do. So it's exactly the amount that piece is worth. And they got it out on loan. So whoever it belonged to, I'm not sure who it belonged to, they had to have an armed guard there every time that necklace was in a scene.
I believe it. That's crazy.
Yeah. So what other parts?
Just like the Lotus and how mm-hmm. they sold a lot of cars. Do you know what else I think sold a lot from this movie?
I feel like I should.
Something else that was maybe product placement?
Yeah, I feel it's like tickling the edges of my mind, but I can't recall.
What was her favorite drink? Did you notice?
Oh, no. No.
Diet Coke.
Oh, yeah, I did miss that.
Yeah, she like has a whole moment where she's struggling to open it. That's one. And then later on, there's a Diet Coke placement. And so I'm sure that Diet Coke got an influx of of sales after this movie as well. Because I can't be the only person that noticed it.
You've got me curious. Because I did not notice it, so I did not look it up. I wonder when Diet Coke first became a thing. I feel like it was the 80s, but let's see. Okay. Okay, so it was introduced to the United States in 1982. So a little bit before this movie came out. But, you know, it probably did sell quite a bit of Diet Coke after this movie came out.
One thing that I did enjoy, a line that was said was, and I'm paraphrasing, but she was like, "You're the planner and I'm more of a fly by my seat kind of gal." That's us. You're the planner and I'm the fly by my seat kind of gal.
Well, but you do it well. You think really well in the moment.
I'm flying by the seat of my pants.
Which line was that?
It was Julia Roberts. She was talking about Richard Gere, how he's the planner, and she just kind of rolls with the punches.
Right.
Speaking of punches, let's talk about that scene real fast with Stucky.
At the end. That was so upsetting.
Yeah. Let me just say that no man, despite what your profession is, has a right to touch you without your consent.
Absolutely not. And everybody should be treated with respect and respected for the work that they do.
Yes.
And that includes sex workers. Absolutely.
It's upsetting on any level. And then people taking advantage of that. It's so upsetting.
Mm-hmm.
These women are very brave for what they do. That's all I got. So again, it's another role where Julia Roberts is stepping into the shoes of someone's story who needs to be told. And I think that it's really important to see this side of things because it is what a lot of women are having to deal with in that mm-hmm. profession. And there was still a lot of stigma surrounding sex workers, but slowly people's eyes are being open to being more open-minded and understanding of that mm-hmm. profession. And I think it's important that we can see that it's not okay for men to treat women that way in general, but especially in that profession as well. Just because they are giving their bodies over does not mean that anybody can just take it.
And I think this movie does a really good job of showing the difference between treating someone with respect,
mm-hmm.
like how Richard Gere treats her most of the time mm-hmm. as a sex worker and as an individual, and then pointing out those moments where there was a lapse in that and they were no longer treating her like a person.
Mm-hmm.
When Edward shares with his lawyer that she's a sex worker, and that's what sets the lawyer, you know, over there to start harassing her and treating her very, very differently than he was originally.
Mm-hmm.
And they have an argument about that, and she almost leaves.
Right.
And then he comes and apologizes to her and realizes that he had made a mistake and he wants her to stay. And then there's that other moment where he offers to set her up in a condo.
Yeah.
And he's like, "I've never once treated you like a sex worker." Or I can't remember what they say in the movie.
"I've never once treated you like a prostitute," I think is what he said.
Yeah. And he leaves and she says to herself, "You just did."
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is really great that they showed the nuances there, where one way was treating her like a human and the other was treating her like something else.
Mm-hmm.
Something for her to be set on reserve for him to dabble in whenever he had time.
Yeah, a possession.
Mm-hmm. A property.
Women are not possessions. We're not property. What we do with our bodies is our choice. And the scene where he had just told Stucky that was her profession and they're at the horse races and then he comes up to her and starts stroking her arm. It's just so cringeworthy.
It made me want to vomit.
Yeah.
And it changes the tone immediately.
Yes. You don't have the right to touch anybody without their permission. It doesn't matter what they do. It does not matter what they do. I'll say it for the people in the back.
It does not matter what they wear.
No.
It doesn't matter how they look.
You have no right to touch someone without their permission. Period.
Ever.
Ever. The end.
The end. Switching gears a little bit.
Richard Gears?
Yeah, switching Richard Gears a little bit at the same scene where they're at the polo tournament.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there was a direct reference, but considering that there are Pygmalion themes to this movie, them going to the polo tournament reminded me immediately of My Fair Lady, where they go to the races with all of the hats, which I think is the only scene that I like of that whole movie.
I find it so funny that, what is it, like replacing the divots?
Yes.
Is a long, time-honored tradition.
But beware of the steaming divots.
Yes. And she does have fun at that place, that event, that, I don't know what you would call it.
Polo games, tournament.
The tournament.
Yeah.
But it does not seem like her. And I love...
he introduces them to two women?
Two women, yes. And there's some snarky comment that she has. Do you know what it is?
I don't remember.
Something like, everyone's been trying to land him.
Oh, she's like, I'm just in it for the sex.
Yes!
Yeah, everybody's trying to land him for the money. She's like, oh, we have to worry about it. I'm just in it for the sex. Something like that.
Even though she looks the part, she's still very much her. And it goes back to the how she's just so unapologetically her. And what is it? You can take the girl out of the country, but you can't take the country out of the girl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The same thing.
Funny you should mention that. Julia Roberts was born in Georgia.
Yeah.
And they were really worried that her Southern accent would pop out, and they wanted to have that kind of covered. So that's why she has that line about growing up in Georgia in the movie. was just to cover all the bases in case sometimes she sounded a little bit Georgian.
That's really funny. Yeah. But I mean, I was using that as an example, not actually, you know, taking the girl.
You just made me think of that. And it's still relevant to the movie.
She can put on all of these dresses. And it's the same as My Fair Lady, you know, you can put her in all these dresses, but she's still going to be her. She still has her past. She still has all of these experiences that create who she is. And you can't take that away by just putting on a fancy dress, you know. And I love that it's not necessarily his efforts, but despite society's efforts to tell her what's proper and what's not, she's still going to be her.
Mm-hmm. No, and I think that the first date that she has with the first gown that she buys, the only gown that she buys the first time, mm-hmm. that whole scene is so lovely with the escargot shooting across the room. I love the touch of having the server catch the escargot in the air and without moving anything other than his arm. You know, it's like a superpower. That server has got it.
And he's like, it happens all the time.
And like how cute the old man is with her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He's immediately like, let me make you feel comfortable, because he can tell. He's like a super empath or something. I want to make you feel better because you obviously are nervous here.
Well, and that's something that they mentioned throughout the entire movie, is how much she fidgets. Yes, she touches herself a lot here and there. Fidgeting to me, I fidget. I click my nails, or I'm a fidgeter. So when they keep mentioning that she's fidgeting, I'm like, no, she's acting normal. Leave her alone. Stop picking on her.
Just be polite and don't say anything.
I don't think she wore gloves with that outfit, but she did wear gloves with this white suit that she wears, I think. Why don't we wear long gloves anymore, other than the fact that it's hot? But they look so beautiful.
I don't remember them.
That's okay. You can still comment on gloves.
Oh, yeah. Gloves are great.
Fine. Fine. That's going away then.
No.
No, I would think out of everybody, please, be like, yes, gloves, amazing. I would love to do that. Blah, 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 blah. Antiques. But no.
Oh, no. I do have gloves. I have antique gloves. I've gone to vintage stores and I have bought antique gloves, and they are beautiful and they're amazing. Unfortunately, the few times that I've tried to wear gloves as part of my whole outfit in displaying my vintage wardrobe, I inevitably take one off and put it down and leave it.
So that's why we don't wear gloves anymore. Because
there were too many Baileys. Yeah.
There was another line that I wanted to talk about real fast, and that's when she's talking a little bit about her past, and she said, did you ever notice how the bad is so much easier to believe than the good things that are said about you?
Mm-hmm.
And that's very, very accurate. It's amazing how you can have 20 people telling you something wonderful about yourself, but it's that one person that says something negative that you can't get out of your head. And no, that's what you believe.
It stays with you. Yeah. It stays with you for years and years and years.
And so we're here to tell you that you deserve to hear the 20 people, not the one.
Yes. I think it's important to accept people's compliments. You are not obligated to say thank you.
No.
Just because someone gives you a compliment. But I think it's important to take them in and have them kind of just massage your soul and your heart. Don't even think about that they might be just saying that, because it doesn't matter. If you, and in your head, if you're saying they're probably lying, they're just trying to be nice, that is just a story you're telling yourself. Because it's not true unless that other person tells you that that's, that they're actually just trying to
appease you. Yeah. And I mean, I'm preaching to myself. It's something that I actively have to work on too, is not focusing on the negative and trying to focus on the positive and knowing that it's okay. And I'm worth more than whatever that negative comment is. But it's so Absolutely. Easy to get bogged down by it and fixate. Half the time, the negative comments are just subjective.
You know? A lot of times people kind of throw away things and don't think about the impact they're going to have.
Well, and a lot of times it's just how you construed it. That might not have even been their intent.
Right.
Yeah. Be nice to yourselves.
You deserve it.
I'm trying to be nice to myself. Be kind to women. They're not your objects.
Chaney.
Yes.
You are a really great sister.
You're a really great sister, and I love you, Bailey.
I think that we've gone over all the things that I've written down, other than the red jacket that she wears at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what about the red jacket?
I really like it. And apparently, while I was doing research, it was kind of considered iconic for the movie. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that it was bought off of a random person walking around while the costume designers were driving around trying to get ideas.
Huh. Interesting. Mm-hmm. I will say, a lot of the times when she's walking down the street, people are looking at her, staring at her, making us feel uncomfortable for her. Mm-hmm. But nowadays, the outfits that she's wearing are nothing. You know, you see teenagers wear outfits like that now, and we're a lot less
judgmental
about it now, which I guess is good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, in the beginning when you didn't see her whole outfit, I thought that the dress, the cutouts, I thought that they were asymmetrical and that the ring was pulled over to the side, and I was like, oh my gosh, I love that. But then when it was centered, I was like, I don't like it as much.
But really, it's kind of cute.
It is, but I think it would have been better if it was to one side or the other.
I like the asymmetrical idea. But I mean, I feel like I could have worn that at a club in college.
Oh yeah, totally.
I wouldn't wear it now. I would not feel comfortable in it. Other people my age, your age, older, I don't care. If they have the confidence to wear it, great. I just would be self-conscious the whole time, thinking that I would move wrong and
splash everybody.
The whole world would be exposed. By that, I mean my butt. Because that's the size of it.
That's the size of it. That just sounds like a end of the conversation. And that's the size of it.
And that's how we're ending our show every time now. And that's the size of it.
That sounds good to me.
I'm not going to do that. I'm not yes-anding this.
Okay. Well, I did see one more thing. Mm-hmm. The hotel that they're in, mm-hmm, is supposed to be the Beverly Wilshire Hotel, but they actually filmed it in the Ambassador Hotel, which no longer exists. It was torn down. But the Beverly Wilshire Hotel, which is what it was supposed to be in, or what it was titled as in the movie, that apparently on their website, I did not check this, but I saw this on many sources, so I probably should have actually gone to their website to double check. But they have this thing called the Pretty Woman Experience, It includes retail therapy with a personal stylist and wardrobe consultant, where you get shuttled around Rodeo Drive in a Mercedes-Benz, not a Lotus, and you have a VIP suite, and you get a couples massage and off-the-menu items prepared with the executive chef. And that's the Pretty Woman experience, apparently.
Interesting. How much is it?
I didn't write it down, but I think it was $1,000.
Wow. Okay. Okay. Maybe we should look into it if we make money and go to LA.
And we go to LA and we're like, I must do the Pretty Woman experience.
I mean, it is the only thing to do in LA.
Yeah, that place has nothing to do.
No, that place is so boring.
Snooze fest.
I do want to say the acting manager at the Beverly Wilshire, I love him so much.
Oh, he's my favorite. He's just, yeah. He's so great. You think that he's going to be a terrible person in the beginning, but he immediately like has compassion for her and helps her, and she checks in with him, and you can tell that there's this real bond that develops between the two of them.
Well, and you know, he is a bit of a stickler at the beginning, but he always calls her Miss Vivian. Mm-hmm. There's always that respect there. And even though he tries to send her away at the beginning, he quickly changes his tune and treats her with nothing but respect. Mm-hmm. Tries to do what's best for her as a person, not just for the integrity of the hotel.
Right. And that scene where she's crying in his office, mm-hmm. the part where she's stuffing the tissue, mm-hmm. not tissue, it was a handkerchief, all in her nose, uh-huh. that was improvised. She hoped that it wasn't going to make it into the movie.
Well, too bad.
Well, any final thoughts?
I liked the movie. Did you want to talk about the end?
Oh, yes. Let's talk about the end. That's important. So, you know, there's that whole thing where she kind of prompts the end, foreshadows it, I guess, with the whole thing where she's telling about her past and how her mom used to lock her in the attic. And when she was up there, she used to have this daydream that a knight in shining armor would save her from the attic. And so at the end of the movie, Edward comes to his senses, realizes how he really feels and what he really wants, and drives to his limo to her apartment with roses hanging out of the top of the limo, and he conquers his fear of heights in order to get to her by going one level up on the fire escape. little steps, Edwards.
Baby steps, yes.
And she meets him halfway down, and what does he say to her? I can't remember.
All I remember is he has the roses in his mouth and he takes them out and then holds his arms out open and kind of shakes his shoulders a little bit.
He says something to her. I don't care about his words as much. Maybe we should look it up. But when that whole ending was starting, I was like, okay, this is going to really leave a sour taste in my mouth. The whole thing was her being powerful and finding her own space and asserting who she is. And I didn't want it to end with this rich guy that it took him a while to admit that he was in love with her, saving her the end. I was not going to be okay with that. But her saying that at the end, not him saying, you saved me, I think it was really, really powerful.
It's so what happens after he climbs up and rescues her? And she says she rescues him right back.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not just the damsel in distress. It's we're equal partners. Mm-hmm.
I really liked that aspect of the movie. And I think that, yeah. Yeah. I liked it. There. I liked it. That's it. Boom.
Boom. Drop mic. That's all I got. That's all I have to talk about.
Yes. And we have one more that we're going to watch with Julia Roberts.
Yes. So at the end of each category, or I guess at the end of each actress, we've picked four categories. And we've decided that we want to leave the fifth up to our listeners. So for this round, since we are just now getting started, we've only sent out the podcast to a very few people. And so we've asked one of our friends to pick the next movie. So Her choice was none other than Stepmom. Yes, we will be covering Stepmom next time. And then after that is a whole new actress. We will say goodbye to Julia until we feel like we have to cover her again because she has such a
I don't think we're saying goodbye forever.
No, just goodbye for now. And we're going to move on to another actress.
I just want to say how much I've enjoyed so far watching all these Julia Roberts movies because it had been a while since I had seen her. And I had never seen Erin Brockovich. I had never seen Sleeping with the Enemy. And I pretty much hadn't seen Pretty Woman. Although I know I watched it when I was younger. I just didn't really remember any of it. So this has been really great. And also I started watching Homecoming.
What was the other movie we watched?
Hook.
Oh, Hook. Right. Yeah. Seen that one a million times. But yes, it's been really fun getting to experience all these new movies at the age that we are now as opposed mm-hmm. to children. It's a whole different perspective. Also, I was telling Nick this the other day, getting to watch these movies, watching this actress specifically, puts a whole other perspective on it.
Absolutely. And I really enjoy researching the movie through the focus on the actor. That changes things quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. It gives me such mm-hmm. of an appreciation. I really like it. It was a good yes. idea that we had.
Good job, us. Chaney, you've got great ideas. Just lock that away.
Bailey, you have great ideas. You Thank lock you. That away. Let's keep telling each other what to do. Anyway, this was fun. Yeah. I enjoyed this one.
It sounds like we're ending our series on Julia Roberts, and that's not the case. It's just that we're no longer picking.
Yes. Oh, and we've decided to alternate who does which listener's choice. So since I started the process, it will be me this time. I will be taking on Stepmom. It's going to be hard because it's such an emotional ride.
Well, you know how I feel about sad movies, but I'm going to do it.
We're going to do it. We're going to cover it. We're going to have fun with it, despite all the tears that I'm going to cry while watching it.
All right. Well, I guess this is goodbye.
I think that's the size of it.
You did it.
I did it. It's never happening again.
Just you wait.
Thanks for listening and tune in next time when we cover Stepmom. Till then.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.